Room. Dr. Brad Hines here today, just by myself. Emily is off this week. She's out teaching about farm safety trainings this week, so she's been pretty busy. Wanted to cover an interesting topic today, but actually before we get started, hopefully you'll be able to join us in the next few weeks. We've kind of got a exciting lineup. I went on a spree of getting some guests. So we're going to talk about some grazing, cover crops, virtual fencing. I wanted to touch a little bit on feeding colostrum. As we go into winter, talk about colostrum feeding and the depression of colostrum that we see. We might even touch on some of the Jersey colostrum work that's been going on here in the U.S. Also talk about some forage work and touch on lameness a little bit, some new exciting precision technology with lameness in dairy herd. So we've got a lot of excitement in the next few weeks. So hopefully you'll be able to join us. But today, you know, I wanted to talk about something that I've got some questions about. And, you know, I was at World Dairy Expo last week, talking with different farmers, industry representatives. And one thing that really sort of got the attention was pulled genetics. You know, what about pulled genetics? Well, we're not maybe going to talk about pulled genetics today. Well, that's like a whole nother episode that I could touch on was pulled genetics. And maybe we'll do that in a couple weeks here, talk about what pulled genetics is and how to do that and how we've used it on our dairy. But I want to talk about, you know, disbudding. That's sort of a hot topic. It's always a hot topic in the dairy industry. You know, the National Farm Program released version 5.0 this summer on July 1st. So give some obvious recommendations on disbudding. You know, there's a lot of people, I always fall into the trap too, call it dehorning. You know, we're going to dehorn calves today. And, you know, obviously, yes, I'm a farmer, that's farmer talk. And, you know, disbudding is sort of the, what all the veterinarians and the industry call it. But if you want to call it dehorning, I'm okay with that too, because that's, you know, how I refer to it as. But they are different. Disbudding is for younger calves. Dehorning is sort of when the horns have started to come out and are a little bit longer. Really wanted to talk about disbudding today and really what we've done for research and some of the things that you can think about. We'll talk a little bit about meloxicam at the end and how that might be used in dairy herds. But really, obviously, we know a lot that horned cows pose risk to humans and other animals on the farm. And we'll talk about that too. I did a study with some horned animals here at our research center. So we'll talk about how the craziness that went on with that. But really, you know, most of the dairy animals that we work with all have horn. And horn growing tissue before 8 weeks of age. We don't think about it, you know, in the beef world, a lot of the beef breeds are polled. And it's quite an advantage. A lot of beef producers, you know, there's some breeds that still have horns. So we talk about Hereford and others, but most of beef producers don't really think about disbudding or dehorning animals because they don't really have to. They use polled genetics. A lot of these breeds are naturally polled. So we don't have to worry about it. So really, when it comes down to disbudding, and we've done a lot of studies over the last 5 years in our dairy herd, it's been an interest of mine as well, trying to reduce pain in those animals and how do we reduce pain? Well, there's a lot of different ways that can be done. You know, an interesting fact is we, you know, started down this sort of disbudding work in 2000 and about 18. You know, like most farms, we probably prior to that, you know, we disbudded around 8 weeks. You know, you tried to get animals disbudded early and it never worked out. And, you know, I know some farms, obviously the running joke is, at least in, you know, the Jersey world, if you let them grow the horns out and take the Barnes dehorner, it makes a nice pole on the top of their head, which is pretty and cosmetic, but that doesn't do anything for reducing the pain that these animals experience. So I really went down the pain route and trying to figure out how to reduce pain. You know, I observed a lot of disbudding at our research center. I've done some of that, and it's painful. You know, nobody likes to disbud calves. It's one of those jobs that nobody wants to do, and they want to wait for a long time, but then it kind of comes down to, well, I suppose we have to do it. And so it really comes down to trying to minimize the pain. You know, before, you know, when I started here, maybe 14 years ago, there was really no pain mitigation whatsoever. You just burned the horn and, you know, the calves obviously experienced pain, but there was no treating of that. And, you know, how do you sort of alleviate the pain? So anyway, so we went down that route. 5 years ago, we started looking at how we could reduce the pain in these dairy animals. Well, we started first with, you know, we wanted to give them lidocaine. We started with lidocaine and wanted to see in comparison, you know, some of you know, we have an organic dairy herd here, and we try to look at alternatives to pain mitigation. And so we started out with looking at lidocaine. Another product that was white willow bark, St. John's wort, chamomile, arnica, and fennel. And it was given orally. So you gave this product orally to a calf, you know, you weren't injecting any needles, you know, and that can be an issue with some people as well, trying to, you know, how do we get the nerve block in the right place? And is the lidocaine actually going to work? It can be dangerous. Side note, a long time ago, I was teaching a dehorning lab in intro to animal science at the University of Minnesota as a grad student, and I got stuck with lidocaine. Somebody stuck me, a student, very carelessly. And, you know, that doesn't hurt. That hurts, you know, and, you know, things were numb for a little bit, but, you know, I recovered. But it can be, you know, dangerous if you don't know what you're doing. Anyways, so we looked at the differences between these products. And we also had a group where what we called sham disbudding, where we just sort of simulated disbudding. We put a cold iron on them. We handled them the same way, but we just didn't, you know, disbud them. We wanted to see how the behavior was of the animals that sort of, you know, didn't get disbudded, and does disbudding cause discomfort in animals? So we looked at lots of behavioral stuff, and well, what did we find? We found that using this sort of herbal tincture that we used, it didn't really do anything. It didn't help relieve any of the pain that we saw in the animals. However, one thing is that lidocaine did about the same thing. You know, lidocaine really helped in the beginning of the disbudding. So it sort of maybe alleviated the pain right away within the first few minutes. You still get a spike in sort of pain. We call it cortisol. So we get still a cortisol spike that we see when we use lidocaine. We also got a cortisol spike when we just simulated disbudding. So just the process of disbudding an animal is stressful. It's very stressful. So we just need to figure out how we can reduce that sort of stress throughout the disbudding. One of the things that we saw during this time period is that once the lidocaine wears off, we're talking 6, 7, 8 hours later, and into, you know, we watch these animals for up to 12 hours. The lidocaine has a stronger response in those animals. So they're scratching their head more. They're rubbing their head more in the lidocaine group. I suppose as the numbness wears off, you know, we experience lidocaine at the dentist called Novocaine. You know, when it starts to wear off, you know, our mouth can be drooly and it sort of itchy and kind of got this funny feeling. Well, I think this is what these calves were feeling. So, you know, the lidocaine sort of had these issues well after disbudding. But really, you know, what we saw was the lidocaine and this herbal tincture did not really sort of solve any problems, solve any issues related to pain mitigation in disbudding animals. So really, we need to find better pain mitigation and not just use lidocaine. You know, lidocaine works for the first half hour or so, helps alleviate those things, but it doesn't really take care of the pain. So that sort of led us to the next study. You know, a couple years later, it's like, well, what can we do? Can we use Flunixin, for lack of better term, called Banamine? It's a, you know, NSAID, it's anti-inflammatory. And we really wanted to compare that to this white willow bark. So white willow bark is sort of like aspirin in a human. It has a compound called salicin that is supposed to be reduces pain and inflammation. So we set out to, you know, does white willow bark actually, you know, reduce inflammation in animals? Well, we did a first kind of real study in just some bull calves. We didn't dehorn them or disbud them at all. We just sort of looked at some blood markers and blood parameters to see if we could reduce inflammation in those animals. So we had a group that was treated with Flunixin or Banamine. We had a no treatment group. And then we had sort of low, medium, and high levels of willow bark. And this was administered orally on a body weight basis. So I made the pills myself, or these capsules that we gave to these animals. Then we measured their blood parameters over about a 6-hour time period. And really the only thing that reduced inflammation was Flunixin. The white willow bark wasn't different than doing nothing. So really the white willow bark didn't do anything for reducing inflammation in these animals. But it was all part of a bigger project, so we sort of had to continue on with looking at sort of these alternative treatments for pain mitigation. And the next study was actually doing it in disbudded dairy calves, and we compared white willow bark to lidocaine. And we also had our group that we sort of, what we call sham disbudding and didn't dehorn them. Well, we measured saliva cortisol. So you can collect the saliva and measure the cortisol in a calf. So that's the measure of stress in a baby calf. We also put heart monitors on them. So we got some heart monitors that runners actually use. You know, long distance runners use heart monitors. It's a kind of a strap they wrap around their torso. Well, we did that with calves to monitor their heart rate, and monitored that for about 6 to 7 hours afterwards. So we disbudded all of these animals between 5 and 8 weeks of age, and we found that the lidocaine calves and the sort of willow bark calves had higher heart rate than calves that weren't dehorned. And there was no difference between the lidocaine calves and the willow bark calves for heart rate. So again, the lidocaine treatment didn't really reduce any sort of stress response. You know, it's really a local way to reduce the pain at the time of disbudding. It is not used for long-term pain mitigation. So it's kind of interesting. You know, saliva, we found that cortisol was high for lidocaine calves, and the willow bark calves, it was the same, actually the same. So, you know, the willow bark wasn't really doing much either. An interesting thing, like we found before, is that our calves that we didn't disbud still had some cortisol response. So they're still stressed at the time of, you know, disbudding. So any way we can, you know, sort of alleviate the stress of disbudding is a win for the calves as well. So really we found that, you know, there wasn't much difference between those animals and, you know, that was trying to use the willow bark in a way that was not necessarily sort of pain mitigation, or it was a little bit, but it compared it to lidocaine. So our next study, we set out to compare. So we used lidocaine in all of the calves, you know, so we used, you know, calves got lidocaine plus this herbal tincture to see if it would alleviate the sort of stress response. And then of course, we did our sham sort of simulated disbudding as well. Again, we did the same thing. You know, we gave 5 mils of lidocaine to every calf for each horn bud, and monitored cortisol, heart rate, and all of the fun stuff like we did before. Interestingly, it's kind of the same thing. We didn't really see much difference. The willow bark did not really do anything to sort of alleviate inflammation and pain after disbudding, even when they got lidocaine. So the lidocaine calves were the same as the calves that received, you know, this willow bark as a way to reduce inflammation. Really, the moral of the story was, well, we're not going to use herbal tincture or white willow bark for disbudding calves anymore. We're not going to do that. It doesn't work. It didn't work. It didn't really alleviate pain. You know, we've done 3 studies with it. And so where do we go from here? Well, you know, we still have to use lidocaine. You know, the National Farm Program wants us to use lidocaine, all of us, at the time of disbudding. But we really have to think about pain mitigation afterwards. And what can you use sort of in a farm toolbox to reduce pain in these calves? And I think about this even from, you know, conventional producers and organic ones as well. We'll talk about meloxicam. So it can be used in the conventional world right now. It is not allowed to be used in organic dairies yet. Really, the research that we did here at the University of Minnesota led groups, industry representatives, and others. I was part of those discussions to petition the National Organic Program to allow meloxicam for use in pain mitigation in dairy animals, in organic dairy animals. So that's going through the process now. It's not approved yet, but we hope that it will be. If you are an organic dairy producer, you're welcome to submit some comments to the National Organic Standards Board in favor of that. I have, because I think it's worthwhile from a pain mitigation standpoint. So let's talk about meloxicam and what that does. You know, it's an NSAID as well, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug. So it's kind of like Flunixin or Banamine. It helps sort of improve animal welfare and, you know, reduces pain. And they are a little bit different. You know, the meloxicam and Banamine are a little bit different. So meloxicam can be used in dairy cattle. It's an oral tablet. So, you know, it's probably easier to administer than Flunixin, which needs to go in the vein, not in the muscle. But meloxicam can only be gotten through a veterinary prescription. So you have to talk to your veterinarian to get this. It usually comes in about 15 milligram tablets. You know, the dose for a cow is about 1 milligram per kilogram of weight. So say you have a 1,200 pound cow, you need about 545 milligrams or 36 pills to give this animal. Although, you know, that's probably a lot. I know a lot of people are going, holy smokes, 36 pills to reduce the pain in a cow. Well, there might be ways to do it. You know, if you have a bolus gun, they're not large pills at all. They're by no means are they large. You know, you can put them all in a ball and gun and put them in a cow and would be quite easy to administer. So really, you know, we think about trying to reduce pain in these animals. And so it's really trying to, you know, reduce pain in all animals, whether they're cows or calves. Really, some people use meloxicam in the conventional world for difficult calvings, for a cow and the calf, some sort of muscle injuries or other injuries to reduce pain, you know, lameness, things like that that cause pain in an animal. In our dairy, we tend to use flunixin or Banamine. And if we were to use meloxicam, it would be a lot easier for our workers to administer these with a bolus gun through the oral route versus trying to give these animals a shot. So really, you know, they both work good for pain management, but meloxicam certainly doesn't have some side effects. Flunixin has sort of side effects of maybe stomach upset, uterine malfunction. It could have kidney damage to animals. You know, those are very rare. Very rare. So meloxicam does not have a lot of those side effects. So really, it can help, you know, be a more useful drug in certain situations. It also has sort of a longer mode of action. A dose can last, you know, maybe 3 to 4 days, whereas flunixin won't last more than 24 hours and probably a lot less than that. So there's some benefits to using sort of meloxicam. Obviously, so, you know, we talk about milk withholds or beef withholds. Meloxicam has a 5-day milk withhold, 21-day sort of meat withhold. So there is that. Flunixin has a 72-hour milk withhold. So 3 days, meat is about 8 days. So, you know, flunixin is less from a meat and milk withhold than meloxicam, but it's a lot less, you know, sort of toxic to the cows. Flunixin can be better for certain things, maybe for high fever or toxic mastitis. You know, it certainly depends on what the condition is. You know, work with your veterinarian to figure out what you might use it for. You know, we go back to disbudding. You know, we're talking about disbudding today, and I think that's where it really comes in to use in these animals to help reduce pain. So baby calves experience pain, and we want to help them reduce that sort of inflammation. So we're probably, hopefully, you know, it gets approved in the organic world. I'm going to start using meloxicam in our conventional animals, our conventional calves that we disbud to try and reduce their pain. I've done a lot of dehorning in the last few years with all of these research studies, and I don't like to do it. It's very painful to watch the calves do that. You know, obviously they recover and go on just fine, but we try to reduce that pain in the beginning. One other way, the last point, you know, we can reduce pain by using polled genetics. And like I said, we'll talk about polled genetics another day because that's a huge topic that we can discuss. But we have used polled genetics in our herd, probably about 20% of the breedings that we've done in Holstein and Jersey. Some of our Viking Red sires have been polled. And so we have quite a few polled animals on the ground, not as many as what I thought I would get by using polled genetics. And like I said, that's a bigger topic. I think polled genetics deserves some recognition. You know, as we move into the future of the dairy industry, it's a lot easier to have polled animals and not have to worry about disbudding them. So I hope you learned something today about disbudding and that you should use lidocaine for, you know, nerve blocks when you're disbudding animals, whether you're burning them off using a caustic paste or any other method of disbudding. Disbud your animals early. Obviously, less than 30 days is ideal. but you can do it up to 8 weeks, but you know, around a month would be ideal. And try to use some pain mitigation, you know, whether that's meloxicam, Flunixin, some other type of pain mitigation, but work with your veterinarian to find a way to do that. So hopefully you've, you know, learned a few things today and about some of the disbudding work that we have done in our research farm. Like I said, if you have any questions, comments, or scathing rebuttals, feel free to email us at themoosroom, that's themoosroom at umn.edu, or contact us online at U of M Extension, or follow me on Instagram at UWCROC Dairy. And with that, we'll see you next time.